second hour, Darren, Donnick, and Chase here on this rainy Thursday. Hopefully it goes away. Darren McFarland, Willie Donnick, Chase McCabe with you. Always good to catch up with Richard Deitch from The Athletic. He's always got something really cool to say. Richard, how you doing?
Yeah, a lot of pressure now.
I know.
That intro.
That was quite a build-up, huh? I got to be honest.
Yeah.
I missed Eli and Peyton on Monday night. I'm going to be honest. I watched as little Monday Night Football with that game than I have all season because it just wasn't the same. The game I didn't think was that interesting. It could have used a little Peyton and Eli. I think they've made a mistake going away, but, I mean, obviously it's their choice. But it, who knew this would really turn into the phenomenon that it's turned into, right? I don't know how they go back. I mean, how do you put this horse back in the barn? Isn't it about four farms over by now?
Now, first of all, you're such an SEC honk with the Eli and Peyton Manning.
Yeah, I know. Is it bleeding through?
Welcome to Nashville.
I know, exactly. Welcome to Nashville. Well, so
and I use the horse thing, and the farm reference too. So yeah, it's yeah. I know.
Yeah. By the way, as a New Yorker, you know what the SEC is for us? Securities and Exchange. I'll be here all week. So here's the thing with the Manning brothers. Like, this is just the reality of it. Like, I don't think they would have signed a deal for 17 games. You know, Peyton has had so many opportunities to be a NFL analyst at the, you know, in the A chair, basically. He could have gotten the Monday Night Football job anytime he wanted. I'm fairly certain probably, you know, one of the other networks, maybe not CBS, but probably one of the other networks would have blown out their current analyst to get Peyton in. So, you know, like, it's very clear that the schedule of doing every single primetime game is not what he wanted. So, well, I'm not disagreeing with you. Like, I think they've been excellent. They're fun to watch. It's a totally interesting broadcast. I wouldn't even worry about it because I just don't think the reality ever would have existed where they would have done 17 games. Now, to sort of get back to the more interesting question is, like, is there a ceiling on how many people will watch? And so the last 2 weeks of the Manning megacast, they were sitting around 1.8, 1.85 million viewers. Now, you know, remember, it's on ESPN2. It's not on ABC or it's not on ESPN. So it's naturally going to be lower just given households. What I don't know, and I think the only way you really could know is if you somehow flip the broadcast, is I just don't know what Peyton and Eli would draw if they were on the main broadcast. My sense is they would draw the exact same thing as, you know, as the main group, but not necessarily more. But, you know, it's really hard to sort of tell, like, what the ceiling is. I think ESPN has really done something that's really great, is they give people who like this the alternative and the option to check out the brothers talking about this. And then they still have, obviously, the main broadcast, which I think clearly more people are comfortable with just because it's familiar. It's not, you know, a lot of fans, maybe not you guys, but a lot of fans just generally, they want the game as they're used to. They don't want two guys talking in the corner. There's older fans, so they're more used to tradition than maybe younger fans who, you know, are used to megacast stuff or watching games on Twitch and stuff like that. So I think ESPN's found the right fit. If I had to give them advice, and they generally never take my advice, but if I had to give them advice, I think next year they should really just, like, they should just pick the games that are far and away the best and most popular games of the year and assign those 10 or 11 games to the Manning. So, if that was four games in a row, well, then they do four games in a row. If that was, you know, three games early and then they take, like, 8 weeks off and then do the last 9 weeks, you know, whatever, that's how I would do it, is I would just line them up with the most interesting and best games, because that, as a football fan, that's when I'd really like to see Eli and Peyton discuss. I'm not sure I need to see them do, like, Jaguars versus, Jets or something like that.
Has the flex scheduling kicked in for Monday night yet, though? Because I know that's a part of the new deal.
Yeah, later. You know what? That's a good question. I don't think it is for 2021, although if I'm wrong, I totally apologize. I definitely know it is there for next year. I think, though, that all these deals start, like, you know, floating in your head. Like a Prevagen moment here. I think the ESPN deal is like what's called a bridge deal. So they had to bridge it from 2021 to 2022. So I don't think they get the flex this year, and then I think starting next year, yeah, they have a flex. I don't know if the flex is as good as the one that Sunday Night Football has, but yeah. This has been the holy grail for ESPN. I mean, they've wanted a better relationship with the NFL. They've wanted to figure out a way to get rid of the dog games on Monday Night Football late in the year, and they've done it. I mean, I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist, but if you're really paying attention to ESPN over the last year, year and a half, how many really deep investigations on the NFL have they done that you remember? That network talking about concussions anymore and the stuff that the NFL really dislikes? Not really, right?
No. It'll be.
I might connect the dots. I might connect the dots there, but you know, we'll see.
Week 12 of this year is when it's supposed to start.
Is that when flex starts?
That's okay, it. Yeah, according to multiple things I just found on Google. So there
you
go.
You are the new media writer for the Athletic. Congratulations. God speak to you.
Thank you very much.
Speaking of ESPN, what did you make a guy that we got to know? This playing days in college here at Vanderbilt, Jay Cutler, and got to know over the years.
Sorry for laughing. I mean,
Nashvillian. Do we claim him? Yeah, we do. We claim Jay. What did you make of Sage Steel going on his podcast and obviously got a lot of attention?
No, it did. I mean, so here's the. I mean, people can certainly see this on Twitter. It's totally checkable. I'm one who really has said for a long time since I've covered ESPN and others that people should not be suspended. I just find that sort of as a general rule, like kind of silly and insane. It feels like high school. The judicial process at media networks honestly is not equal as a general rule. It's the stars of networks get Jordan rules versus others. You know, Charles Barkley can do and say things that, Turner Sports, you know, on-air talent X cannot. I'll try to be as sort of delicate as I can be without, you know, wading into the culture war debates, which like my head is about to sort of throw myself off my house here. If you're Sage Neal and you believe some of the things you do, which you certainly have a right to believe, I think you have to know and be aware that if you publicly make statements that goes against what your employee has either mandated or what your sort of employer believes is appropriate to be out in the public. And keep in mind, this is the Walt Disney Corporation, right? This isn't another company. This is the Walt Disney Corporation. I think if you're hurt, you got to know that there are potential consequences for that. And the potential consequences are, you know, you get suspended with pay, you get suspended without pay, you get pulled from, a very nice boondoggle in Arizona where you're being treated great and talking to leaders and stuff like that. So I think somewhere, I think Sage is bright enough to know that if you're going to voice that and if you're going to voice that somewhere where it can get picked up, I don't know how many downloads Jay Cutler has, but he's a former NFL player. Like someone's listening to what he's saying. You have to sort of know that there's potential consequences there. What does it mean if you're sort of looking long-term without knowing how many years Sage has left on her deal or months left on her deal? That strikes me as just a relationship that eventually is going to end. Maybe they buy her out sooner. Maybe she wants to get bought out sooner. But if you're asking me as someone who's sort of covered media for a long time, it feels like there's an end date with that relationship. It's just now really just a question of when, but I would say this with Jamel Hill, which I thought was an absurd suspension. I think I said that the first time Curt Schilling went into like crazy land, I didn't think he should have been suspended, although he eventually at a certain point went past to me the point of no return. I never really sort of think this really accomplishes anything, although, you know, maybe it accomplishes like you're letting your other employees know that there are just lines that you can't cross kind of thing. But my quick take on this is just that like that marriage is going to.
Yeah.
It's just really kind of a question of when.
Isn't it amazing, Richard, how many of these stories come out of podcasts today? It's amazing. Well, I mean, yes, ESPN and just the whole – I just feel like people go on a podcast. Like, I think their guard is up for, like, radio.
Yeah.
But I don't know, for whatever reason, their guard is not up on podcasts, and I don't know why.
I'll tell you why. It's a totally great point because I have a very – I have a sports media podcast. It's very niche. It's, you know, this isn't part of my take. But, you know, I also do radio, obviously. And there is, for whatever reason, I think you guys see this too, in the back of a guest's mind, when a guest is on radio, they feel like they are talking to people live, right? They feel like that if you say something, like somebody's going to hear it. There could be consequences, good, bad, or indifferent, if you say something that's beyond the pale. And when I say that, you know, like cursing or just something that's just, you know, something that just is like just offensive or horrific. For whatever reason, when you're doing a podcast and you have like a conversation before the podcast starts and it's very casual and there's sort of no expectation that it's live, right? Because I think that's sort of the key, that it's live and someone's listening. You're totally right. People just sort of go to places and say things where they wouldn't expect it. I've had so many people on the Sports Media Podcast who cursed on my podcast, which I particularly like, by the way. But there's no way. There is no way these people would be like, you know.
Nope.
You know, and like, you know, in the later game, the Dodgers won 2-1 as effing Max Scherzer did. They would never say that during their normal job. But for whatever reason on a podcast, you are there's a comfort zone. Maybe you sort of just get lost in the fact that you're talking to another individual. But, yes, I think that's a great observation in that, like, so many things have been said on podcasts that, like, really come back to be, at least in the media-wise, sort of pretty significant media moments. Although I would say, I can't get into Sage's head or Cutler's head, but, like, again, like, I feel like if you're talking to a known person like Jay Cutler, like, a former quarterback, someone who's known in sports popular culture, like, you know, someone's going to listen to that. Like, you're not talking to, you know, you're not talking to, like, La Jolla Community College and, you know, it's just a student radio station. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, it's going to get out somewhere.
You got it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think all of us who have worked in these jobs, and you guys know this, it's very rare, right? Like, that somebody well-known does or says something and it doesn't get out. It's just, we just live in such a small world, but like a big social media world where that stuff travels. So it's interesting, though. You're totally right. It's like kind of an interesting human dynamic thing as to why people are more comfortable on podcasts.
Richard, speaking of that, I did hear an example of some expletives on your excellent interview with Kate Scott and Lisa Byington as they were expressing their excitement for one another when they found out that each got the NBA jobs. But that is going to be fun to watch. Let me ask you this. There's a lot of stuff coming out about just the ratings being so strong for the NFL to this point in the season. And we knew the game on Sunday was going to be a big one. So tell me what you thought NBC did with the spotlight of having a game like that.
I thought they did well. I mean, listen, you know, you when it comes to a game of that magnitude, and it was a significant game of magnitude, like it's the greatest football player in the history of the sport coming back to play the team he played for in 20 years, playing against the coach where he won 6 titles. Like, that's never happened. That's not going to happen again in our lifetime. It may never happen again in the NFL because I'm not sure anybody's going to win as much as Tom Brady or play as long as Tom Brady. So the coverage was justified. They obviously did what ESPN does. They just over-promoted the hell out of it. They sent the Today Show there. They sent their news department there. They did a massive Football Night in America pregame. They tried to cover sort of every kind of angle they could in terms of Brady, including like his walkout onto the field prior to the game. And so I thought they did a good job, at least, of, you know, what their role and job is, and that their job at the end of the day is to get eyeballs on that game. Like, that, it's a profit for profit company. You know, it's not the United Way. They're trying to make money at NBC Universal. And they were rewarded with a massive number. I mean, $28 million for a Sunday Night Football game is a mega number. You know, some of your audience probably doesn't know this, but the reality is that the most valuable real estate in television and the most watched window in television, it's not Sunday Night Football. It's not even close. It's the 4:25 p.m. window for either CBS or Fox when they have usually a late-game doubleheader of magnitude, you know, Cowboys or Packers or whatever the team. So for them to draw, like, Thanksgiving Day kind of numbers is an incredible number. It'll be easily Sunday Night Football's most watched game. It'll probably only be topped, I would think, maybe by the Thanksgiving, one of the Thanksgiving Day games. So if you're NBC, I think you guys got to feel amazing. I wrote a piece for The Athletic before the season started about the extent to which they went to pitch the NFL on this game. You know, from the head of NBC Universal making calls to the NFL, this is the game they wanted more than any other game. Obviously, they thought it was going to be the game of the year, and I think I think everything got justified. In terms of the game itself, and how it was called, I think the production was good. That's a really first-class production. I do think Michaels and Collinsworth, in all honesty, they were really kind of like PRing and selling, Belichick and Brady are okay. The quote-unquote media is overblowing this. At a certain point, it was like Chris Collinsworth was making me convinced that like Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks were Brady and Belichick starring in a romantic comedy. everybody in New England knows that that relationship went bad pretty fast. But it was great. At least the way the game ended, a lot of drama. And if you're NBC, I think you just got to be so overjoyed with the viewership result.
And then, of course, there were the camera shots of Bill Belichick's son, which we'll have to wait and see where that goes.
That game was like, that's a lot of memes from that game. There's so much crazy stuff that happened. And then if you had no dog in the fight, for any NFL game to end on like a 56-yard doink field goal is just like an incredible ending of a game. You know what I mean? Like the
in the rain, too.
In the rain. Like, you watch it, and then it doinks and it goes out. Just the way that Justin Tucker game ended was incredible. Like, I have no affiliation with the Ravens, good, bad, or indifferent. But, like, I loved how that game ended just because it was, like, such a thrilling thing to watch.
They're red hot with the drama, for sure. Along the same lines, baseball's got to be pretty happy. They have, first of all, getting the crowds back is huge for the postseason games. But I noticed there were some good numbers for ESPN with Red Sox-Yankees. It's comforting if you're a baseball fan that there's still an audience there.
Yeah, see, I would be interested in, like, what does that draw in Nashville, Tennessee? Like, does anybody in your neck of the woods care, or are they just all drunk, like, from bachelorette parties or something?
It's a fair question. The three of us are, and our producer as well, so four, we are massive baseball fans. Like, we are huge into it. But
so you guys watched it?
Oh, absolutely. But the problem is, from our market standpoint, we'd all probably prefer to talk a lot more baseball, particularly through the summer. But there's not that much interest, really, other than now Chase is a Braves fan. The Braves are probably the most followed team here, for sure.
Probably.
And in the days where TBS doesn't have the coverage that it was, like, there's a lot of generational stuff there, but it's not as big a spotlight as it was 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah. So there's a reason the ESPN does a lot of Yankees Red Sox, and the reason is just because it's like the one rivalry that they can guarantee to get viewership numbers. Like, and again, viewership numbers in baseball are far different than football. If ESPN gets 2.5-3 million people for a Red Sox Yankee game, that's a great night for them. This one was off the charts. It was 7.5 million people who watched. Like, it peaked at over 8 million. It's the most watched ESPN like Red Sox game, maybe in like 15 years or something like that, I think I saw. So the numbers on this were incredible. The numbers in Boston and New York were particularly great, but my read on that is that more people were interested in this away from those two cities. So, while I trust me, if you're not in these cities, I get it. And like, you totally get an overkill of Yankees Red Sox in the same way the NFL gives you an overkill of the Cowboys. But the reason the reality is, like, there are people interested. So, if you're a television programmer, you're putting them on because it's not just the cities that these two teams play in. They do have fans away from those cities. I think some of this obviously was just a, really happenstance and fortune for ESPN. One game playoff between two very storied teams, that's a rare thing. And the numbers were off the charts. The sort of the irony of all this is that American League wild card game may turn out to be the most watched baseball game until the World Series. Think about that.
Talking to Richard Deitch of The Athletic, the author of The Media Circus. And you mentioned, just going back to NBC for a second, Al Michaels. What is the latest with him as they have the Super Bowl this year? I know he's been rumored to possibly go to Amazon and do their Thursday night football package. He still, I think, has one more year in his contract at NBC. But I think it's well known that Mike Tirico is waiting in the wings for that seat. So what do you see happening in that situation?
Yeah, hat tip to the New York Post, who thinks it's 90% done for Al to Amazon. That makes sense to me as well. NBC has a sort of a they have a really good problem, I think. Like, they have a they have an announcer who's still great at 77, who still, I think, is at the top of his game. And then they have somebody in Mike Tirico, obviously, who has similar experience as the lead voice of a massive NFL package and is just sitting there waiting. Like, to me, this is a management thing, like, that you just got to navigate. As long as, like, you, to me, like, are above board with Tirico and Michaels in terms of what your plans are, then everybody should be okay. And if you want, let's say, like, Al to do some games in 2022 on NBC, but I think that's still a smart idea. Like, the television is just weird sometimes. Like, there's, like, some kind of weird notion that somehow, like only one guy can call, like this one thing, or one woman can only call this one thing. Like, why couldn't you, in theory, split that schedule next year between 8 games Tirico, 8 games Michaels? Like, what, Chris Collinsworth is not going to be able to interact with Mike Tirico? Of course he is. It just makes no sense. Will it have any effect on viewership? No. I actually can make an argument as a publicist. It might actually gain some audience because people would be curious to see, you know, the new guy coming in that week. But, yeah, I do think that NBC is probably just trying to figure out a way where they don't come off like they're trying to push Al out. But, you know, they do eventually want to start this new era because Mike Tirico, you know, knock on wood, health willing, is the voice of Sunday Night Football for the next 15 years. And I'm sure they would like to sort of start that sooner than later. But to me, like, this is an ego thing. If you just keep everybody's sort of television ego in check, you got two guys who are great at it. So to me, I would say you got two guys who are great at it. Use them both. Like, give Al some of those weeks off where if he doesn't want to travel from his L.A. home to wherever, and then Tirico comes in and does that. Or, quite frankly, if you want Drew Brees to get some experience, kick Collinsworth out of the booth for a week and make it Tirico and Brees. This, to me, is, and then in terms of covering TV for as long as I have, this so much interesting things can happen if you let the egos get out of the way. But as I've always told everybody, I mean, if you want to cover egos in sports, don't cover teams. Cover the media.
Yeah. No doubt about that.
And by the way, Tirico and Brees can hold their own umbrella, too, which is a notch
in
there.
Yeah, so Rodney Harrison. Yeah. I know it's a little P. Diddy action from, like, Rodney Harrison giving you from back in the day. Yeah, it is crazy. Isn't it crazy just, like, the kind of things that, like, go viral and people pick up? Like, you know, like that Rodney Harrison umbrella thing. Like, I think people will remember that from that Patriots-Bucks game. Maybe as much as anything, I guess, except the final score. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's
guilty as charged. I tweeted a picture of it the minute it was happening. I tweeted about it with a picture. I mean, I think Rodney probably helps that because I don't think he's particularly liked by most fan bases, you know, outside of Patriots and Chargers.
Outside of New England Chargers. Yeah. He's, you know, Rodney is one of those guys that, you know, you love Rodney if he's on your team.
Right,
and you really dislike Rodney if he's not. But usually those guys in any sport are really good players. You know what I mean? They're difference makers. They're difference makers in their sport. Actually, I think it was one thing. I know we're gonna roll here quick, but one thing that was interesting was, did you see Belichick with his interview with Rodney Harrison? Was incredibly happy and polite and smiling. It's it's interesting that to see Belichick. Who absolutely knows what he's doing every moment of the day when it comes to his interactions with the press, you know, go all far the Flanagan when Rodney's interviewing. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Well, you delivered, Richard. Great job as always. Really appreciate it. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You got it. Good luck to those Titans, man. You know, got another win down there.
Good Lord, if they lose to Jacksonville, Monday show's going to be pretty easy for 4 hours.
Oh, yeah, tell you that. By the way. Yeah, I really dislike Urban Meyer, so go Titans. Thank you.
Richard Deitch from The Athletic. There's a lot of people in that category for sure. All right, we'll come back. More on the other side as you listen to Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.